Welcome to the deep dive. So today, we're looking at a really fascinating visual roadmap. It's created by ConnieRuth.com, and it's called the HEALS method.
Yeah, and it's quite a striking piece of work, honestly.
It really is. And our mission today for this deep dive is to basically unpack this infographic, because it asks this highly counterintuitive question for you, the listener. It asks, what if your deepest, like, most shameful psychological wounds are actually the exact starting point for your greatest wisdom?
Right, which is just a radical premise when you think about it, because we are so culturally conditioned to view any kind of emotional or psychological damage as, well, basically a deduction in our overall value.
Yeah, exactly, like a flaw.
Exactly, a flaw that just needs to be concealed from the world at all costs.
Which is why the visual design of this roadmap is so brilliant. Like, if you're listening to this and you can't see it, just picture this winding stone pathway. But the stones aren't seamless at all. The path is deeply, deeply cracked.
But leaning heavily into that that kintsugi aesthetic?
Yes. The Japanese art of repairing broken pottery with gold. So those cracks in the path are literally glowing with gold. And what stands out to me isn't just the visual of the gold repairing the fractures. It's how the method uses that aesthetic to completely reframe the whole psychological concept of a wound.
It's not about hiding the damage anymore.
Right. Instead of the damage, like disqualifying you from moving forward, the gold in those cracks suggests that the repair itself is what makes the structure capable of carrying you.
The visual metaphor really does a massive amount of heavy lifting right out of the gate. I mean, it establishes immediately that we are not talking about erasing the past here. We're talking about transforming it. And that transformation requires a very specific sequence of actions, starting with, well, a diagnosis.
So let's get right into that sequence, starting with the first phase of the HEALS acronym. The H, hear your heart. The text on the roadmap directs you to, and I'm quoting here, uncover your deepest wounds, desires, and dreams to gain clarity. And the accompanying illustration is this beautiful lotus flower cradling a softly glowing heart.
And, you know, the clinical reality of that instruction is often incredibly uncomfortable for people.
Oh, I bet.
It requires a level of stillness and, frankly, radical honesty that our modern environment just actively discourages.
Yeah, I tend to think of this step less like a delicate lotus flower and more like an architectural stress fracture in a house.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Right. Like, if you're a homeowner and you see this massive crack forming in your drywall, the easiest thing to do is just slap some spackle over it.
Paint it over and pretend it's fine.
Exactly. Yep. Paint it and pretend the foundation isn't literally shifting beneath your feet. And we do this emotionally all the time. We paint over the stress fracture because we assume, you know, we don't have the time or the money or the emotional bandwidth to excavate the foundation.
We just want to keep living in the house.
Right. But this first step, hearing your heart, it's telling you that to build anything sustainable, you have to tear down the drywall and actually look at the compromised beam.
That analogy perfectly highlights the sheer mechanics of avoidance. We paint over the fracture because we just assume the wound only represents pain. But notice how the method explicitly links uncovering wounds directly with uncovering desires and dreams.
Which is so interesting because we normally put those in two completely different categories.
Completely different boxes, yeah.
Like the trauma goes in one box to be dealt with, you know, maybe never. And the career goals or the relationship dreams go in a totally different happy box.
But psychologically, they are inextricably linked. You really cannot chart a course toward what you deeply desire without first mapping out where you're hurting, because your wounds almost always point directly to your unmet needs.
And those unmet needs are what shape the desires.
Precisely. They are the architects of your deepest desires. The wound and the dream are just two sides of the exact same psychological coin.
So just to make this concrete, if someone had this deep, unexamined wound around, say, being abandoned as a child, their core desire in adulthood is likely going to heavily revolve around finding secure, unshakable attachment.
Exactly. And the lotus flower visual on the map captures this perfectly. I mean, the lotus famously requires muddy, murky water to grow. If you refuse to wade into the mud of your own unexamined pain, you deprive the blossom of its necessary nutrients. You really have to locate the fracture to understand what kind of house you're actually trying to build.
But okay, so once you peel back that drywall and actually look at the structural fracture, you are immediately confronted with all the ugly, complicated mechanisms that have been holding the house together in the meantime.
Right, the coping strategies.
Yeah, you don't just find the wound, you find all the messy ways you've been protecting it. And that naturally forces us into the second phase of the journey, the E in HEALS, explore the shadows.
And this is often where people just abandon the process entirely.
I can totally see why. Because the text here says to compassionately identify and honor the fears and beliefs holding you back. And the pathway in the illustration physically transitions from this shadowy, cavernous area into a bright light.
It's a daunting transition.
It is. But honestly, yeah. I have to push back on the phrasing here a little bit.
How so?
Well, why do we have to honor the fears? I mean, if I am finally going down into the dark, scary basement of my subconscious, I am going down there with heavy-duty trash bags.
You're ready to clean house.
Exactly. I'm going down to throw the junk away. I want to evict those limiting beliefs. I certainly do not want to honor the moldy boxes taking up space in my head.
It is a completely logical, completely human reaction to want to go to war with the things that are holding us back. We view our fears, our anxiety, our avoidant behaviors as the enemy.
Because they feel like the enemy.
They do. But think about what happens neurobiologically when we fight our own internal defense mechanisms.
Yeah.
The friction simply signals to your brain that you are under attack. And what does that do? It makes those fears louder and more entrenched.
Oh, wow. So if I try to aggressively crush, like, my fear of public speaking, my brain just doubles down on the panic because it thinks I'm walking into a literal fire.
Exactly the opposite of what you want to achieve. This step, compassionately identifying and honoring those beliefs, it's a critical pivot, and it's based on a fundamental truth of human psychology. These fears and limiting beliefs, they didn't just appear out of nowhere to torture you.
Right.
They began as vital survival mechanisms. At some point in your past, usually in childhood or during some period of high vulnerability, that specific fear kept you safe. It was a shield.
So, like, the belief that I shouldn't speak up might have been the exact tool you needed to survive a volatile household growing up?
Yes. The clinical term for this is an adaptive response. Your amygdala, the fear center of your brain, learned that staying quiet equaled safety. So if we look at your basement analogy, the fear isn't some monster hiding in the dark.
What is it then?
It's far more accurate to view that fear as a highly dedicated, overzealous security guard, one who simply doesn't realize the threat passed 20 years ago.
Oh, I love that. The guard is still patrolling the empty building every night, thinking it's doing a great job.
Exactly. The guard is just fulfilling its original mandate. If you march down into that basement and try to violently terminate that guard, it will fight back with everything it has because it genuinely believes it is fighting for your life.
That makes so much sense.
But if you walk up to that fear and say, I see you. I recognize the work you did to keep me safe when I was helpless, but I'm an adult now, and I no longer require this level of protection, the dynamic completely shifts.
You're basically saying, thank you for your service, but you are relieved of duty.
Of acknowledging their past utility is the exact mechanism that finally allows your nervous system to stand down. You aren't fighting the shadow, you're integrating it. And that is how you safely walk those outdated beliefs out of the cavern and into the light.
That is profound. And, you know, relieving those internal guards of their duty suddenly frees up an enormous amount of mental space.
Right.
But you're standing out of the shadow now, and just standing around in the light doesn't rebuild the foundation.
No, it doesn't. You need a trajectory.
Right. You need direction.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the action-oriented phase of the map. The A, align with the path.
This is moving from the theoretical into the directional.
And the roadmap is very deliberate with its vocabulary here. It instructs you to co-create a safe, soul-aligned action plan for your healing. And the visual resting on the golden path is this classic brass navigational compass.
The word choices there are really important.
Yeah, the specific choice of the word co-create really stands out to me. It's a sharp departure from that hyper-individualistic, you know, self-made model of self-help that we are usually sold.
Absolutely.
And pairing that with a compass is fascinating. Like, if you're listening to this and thinking about your own action plan, consider the difference between a compass and a GPS. A GPS dictates a rigid turn-by-turn route. If you miss a turn or encounter a roadblock, what does the GPS do? It aggressively recalculates and induces panic.
Right. A GPS demands compliance to a pre-programmed route, regardless of the reality on the ground.
Exactly. But a compass doesn't bark at you. A compass merely points to true north. It gives you an orienting principle, but it allows you the flexibility to navigate around a fallen tree or a boulder in your own way at your own pace.
That distinction perfectly explains the phrase soul-aligned action plan. I mean, there are countless generic GPS-style healing plans marketed to us every single day.
Oh, for sure. The 10-step programs.
Right. They offer a rigid prescription. Wake up at 5 a.m., drink this specific green juice, write 3 pages in a journal, and your trauma will magically vanish. But a soul-aligned plan implies that your true north is based entirely on the specific unmet needs and desires you uncovered back in step one.
Because it's custom.
Yes, it is custom calibrated to your nervous system, not to societal benchmarks.
Which totally explains why co-creating is so vital here. You don't have to calibrate that compass in isolation.
And you shouldn't. Human beings are social primates. Our nervous systems are literally designed for co-regulation. Attempting to heal deep relational or psychological wounds in total isolation often just reinforces the trauma of feeling alone.
Yeah, you're just white-knuckling it.
Exactly. Co-creating means you are developing this plan with the active support of a therapist, a trusted mentor, a spiritual guide, or a supportive community. You are holding the compass, but you have experienced guides helping you read the terrain.
That takes the crushing weight of being your own solitary savior completely off your shoulders.
It really does.
But, okay, I have a theory about this next phase. Because having a compass, a map, and a great guide, that's all intellectually satisfying.
Yeah.
You can sit at base camp, point to the map, and know exactly where you need to go.
But knowing the route doesn't physically move you up the mountain.
Exactly. The theoretical has to become physical. And this drives us into the crucial phase, the L-Live the practice.
The bottleneck of transformation.
Yes. The text demands that we integrate personalized healing tools for your mind, body, spirit, and emotions. And the imagery completely shifts here from a pathway to two figures in deep meditation, surrounded by swirling energy and flowing water. And my theory is, I suspect this is where the entire process stalls out for the vast majority of people.
You are definitely not wrong about that.
Right. Because we have this tendency to treat healing like an intellectual exercise. We read a profound book, or we have a breakthrough in therapy where we realize, my fear of failure stems from the pressure my parents put on me.
The light bulb moment.
Yes, the light bulb. And we think the insight alone cures the ailment. But by Tuesday morning, we are right back to our old anxious behavioral patterns.
Your theory is entirely backed by modern neurobiology, actually. The disconnect you were describing is the gap between top-down processing and bottom-up processing.
Oh, let's unpack those terms for the listener. What's the difference?
So top-down processing happens in your prefrontal cortex. It's your conscious analytical mind. This is where you achieve that intellectual breakthrough you mentioned. You understand why you are acting a certain way.
Okay, the logical part.
Right. But trauma, chronic stress, and those outdated survival mechanisms we talked about earlier, those don't live in the prefrontal cortex. They are stored in your limbic system and your somatic nervous system. They literally live in the body.
Wow. The body keeps the score.
The body absolutely holds the physical memory of the wound. So you can logically know that a situation is safe, but your nervous system is still flooding your body with cortisol and adrenaline because it operates on bottom-up processing. It reacts before you can even think.
So the body is bypassing the logic entirely.
Yes. And this is why the method explicitly dictates that you must integrate tools for the mind and the body. Insight without physical integration is really just philosophy.
So if your soul-aligned plan involves, say, setting healthier boundaries with a toxic family member, you can't just write, "I will set boundaries" in your journal and expect your behavior to suddenly change in the moment.
Exactly. Journaling is top-down. Integration is bottom-up. Integration means you practice saying the word no out loud. You allow yourself to feel the intense physical discomfort, the tightness in your chest, the spike in your heart rate when you enforce that boundary.
That sounds incredibly uncomfortable.
It is. But in that exact moment of physical distress, you utilize somatic tools like specific breathwork to signal the vagus nerve that you are actually safe. You have to physically rewire the nervous system's response to discomfort.
You're actively proving to the body that the intellectual insight is true.
Yes.
Man, that explains the imagery of the flowing water so well. Flowing water isn't a stagnant pond. It represents continuous daily movement. It frames healing not as a one-time event or a fancy weekend retreat, but as a daily hygiene practice.
Like brushing your teeth.
Exactly. You don't brush your teeth once and declare yourself immune to cavities for life. You have to maintain the environment.
Which brings us to the reality of what happens when you string months and years of that daily hygiene together. You don't just maintain the environment, you alter the landscape entirely.
And this lands us in the final phase of the framework, the S-sustained support. The roadmap states, continue the sacred lifelong spiral of growth, adjustment, and service. And the visual representation here is probably my favorite part of the entire graphic.
It's very powerful.
Yeah. It really is. That golden kintsugi-cracked path we've been walking on suddenly twists and loops into a massive infinity symbol.
Oh.
But the material changes. It's no longer made of stone. The figure eight is formed entirely of thick, ancient tree roots and branches.
It replaces the rigid concept of a pathway with organic living architecture.
And an infinity symbol loops back on itself, right? Which suggests you're going to cover the same ground again.
Right.
But because it's made of wood, the analogy of tree rings comes to mind for me.
Oh, I like that.
Because as a tree grows, it adds rings outward. You might be circling around the exact same core psychological issue you dealt with 5 years ago, but like the rings of a tree, you're tackling it from a wider, stronger, more mature circumference. You aren't regressing, you are expanding.
That conceptualization thoroughly dismantles one of the most toxic myths in the self-help industry.
Which one?
The myth of the finish line. I mean, society constantly sells us the idea of an after photo. We are told that if we just do the work, one day we will wake up 100% healed, perfectly unbothered, and immune to pain.
And when that magical day never arrives, we just assume we failed the program or that we're fundamentally broken.
Exactly. The phrase lifelong spiral removes the suffocating pressure of an artificial finish line. It's an acknowledgement that a new life phase, like a new job, a marriage, having a child, will inevitably trigger an old shadow. You will have to pull your compass back out. You will have to make adjustments.
But it won't derail you like it used to.
Right. Because you have integrated the daily practices, your window of tolerance is wider. You handle the trigger with a fraction of the distress you used to experience.
You recover faster. Huh. And, you know, we cannot overlook the final word in that instruction. Service.
Ah, yes. It is the natural externalization of internalized wisdom. If you do all this difficult somatic work and keep the resulting wisdom entirely to yourself, it stagnates.
It just sits there.
Right. The visual of the ancient tree roots perfectly illustrates this. A deep root system doesn't just stabilize the individual tree. It prevents soil erosion for the entire surrounding ecosystem. By sustaining your own healing, you inadvertently become a source of stability for others who are just beginning to look at their own fractures.
You become the person who helps someone else calibrate their compass.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the ultimate question. We've traced this entire progression, right, from diagnosing the stress fracture and relieving the internal security guards, to charting a soul-aligned course, integrating the physical practice daily, and growing those stabilizing roots. What is the overarching transformation that this lifelong spiral actually produces?
Well, the roadmap provides a definitive answer at the very top of the visual.
Yes, there is a call-out box titled The Transformation from Wounded to Whole, and the illustration is a chrysalis bursting open to release this highly detailed butterfly. And the text offers this profound promise. It says, you don't just heal, you become whole, moving from surviving to dreaming.
Moving from surviving to dreaming. That phrase captures the true neurobiological and psychological shift of this entire framework.
It's not just about filling the cracks with gold anymore. It's a complete phase change. Like, a caterpillar doesn't just put a Band-Aid on its wounds. It literally dissolves its previous structure inside that chrysalis to become something capable of an entirely different mode of existence.
And if we look back at the beginning of the journey, when you are simply trying to ignore the fractures in your foundation, you are operating in pure survival mode. The sheer amount of allostatic load, which is the physiological wear and tear on your body from chronic stress, it consumes almost all of your cognitive and emotional bandwidth.
You're just trying to get through the day.
Yes. When your nervous system is solely focused on scanning for threats, you literally do not have the surplus energy required for higher order thinking, creativity, or long-term planning.
Because dreaming is an act of creation, and you can't create when you're purely reacting.
Exactly. Wholeness in this context does not mean the original wound never happened or that you've acquired some pristine, unblemished past. It means the wound has been processed and integrated so thoroughly that it no longer dictates your nervous system's baseline.
It's not running the show anymore.
Right. It no longer holds your energy hostage. You reclaim the bandwidth that was previously being spent on mere survival, and you reallocate it toward your capacity to dream.
It is such a profound shift in how we approach our own pain. It takes the narrative from, I am fundamentally damaged, to I am actively becoming.
It's a beautiful way to look at it.
And as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you, the listener, with a thought to chew on regarding that reclaimed bandwidth. Because the method explicitly states the ultimate goal is moving from surviving to dreaming. Take an honest look in your daily routines, your relationships, and your internal monologues. Are you currently spending the vast majority of your mental and emotional energy just surviving your shadows?
Yeah.
Just painting over the fractures to get through the week?
It's a tough question to ask yourself.
It is. Because if you finally allowed yourself to tear down the drywall, if you could relieve those exhausted internal security guards of their duty and integrate those fears, what is the very first thing you would allow yourself to start dreaming about again?
That is the question that sets the compass to true north.
The path is waiting. The cracks are ready for the gold. You just have to be willing to look at the foundation. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.